Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. You are live from the path.
From the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. I don't know what we're laughing about.
That camera view is fantastic. It is very specifically, the left side is real rough.
Here's what I'm going to tell you.
The right side contains me, and that's the saddest part, that's the less rough side.
If you do the audio-only podcast, this is the week to jump on the YouTube and check it out.
It's worth it.
It's not worth it.
Dan and I are in full regalia.
Yeah, it appears that these two gentlemen are the type of folks that walk up to the buffet and go, I thought ginger ale was included in the free drinks.
Okay, here's what we got going on the show. We gotta hop in quick because we have... What?
No, we're not just going to move past that with that being the only part of us making fun of you two wearing those shirts. What are you talking about?
Nobody cares about you. You got to come back to it. Sprinkle it in through the rest of the show.
Absolutely not.
I get complaints on the complaint line that the show takes too long to get going, so we're getting moving. So... one of the things that we were talking about before the show, we just had to cut it off and start the program because it was getting too late. Mike, give me the quick, 30 seconds on the question.
The question is like people's critique of like the Old Testament and the New Testament feeling very different. And like God is responsible directly for killing quite a few Israelites,
yep.
Right? Mostly for rebellion reasons, but like we look at that in a modern context and through the lens of Jesus' sacrifice, and we're like, well, like smooth-tongued evil can suck in a broken humanity, right? And like God's not, you know, throwing instant judgment out there, but like if you read in the Old Testament, like the rebellion of Korah is a good one, when he gave them the meat, like when people were gorging themselves and dying, you know, and like it was a whole thing that like God has said, okay, like. When Korah's rebellion happened, like he said, okay, I'm going to deal with Korah and his buddy. You two go stand by your tents, and like he let both these tents get sucked up into the ground along with their entire family.
Yeah.
So Korah's 8-year-old daughter, presumably, that's not scriptural, but like is in that group, you know.
Sure.
And same thing with like all the people that were kind of backing Korah's rebellion, who were just too chicken to stand up for it. Like they ended up getting a plague. It's like I know what you did, and so they got a plague against them. And so like the major thought is like when I think of like when I've been. Seduced by the world or not the way that Jesus would see the world or like my sin, I don't think like, man, if I don't hurry up and get my forgiveness in or run this heifer to the temple, then I'm out. And like the Old Testament reads from a modern perspective very much that
right,
way.
Right.
All right, Dan, how do we think about this kind of thing?
Now, I'll tell you what, I think it's on an unhealthy premise. Thinking that the God of the New Testament is different than the God of the Old Testament. That's a very popular belief and thought. And all I can think about...
You can see where they're coming from, though.
Oh, I can
right?
see it. I can see it, but okay. They're just wrong. I mean...
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, all you have to do is read 2 Peter chapter 2, and that in itself pretty much blows that whole thing out of the water, because in chapter 2, Peter is going back to all these historic events where people died, Sodom and Gomorrah, cities full of people of children and women and men and, you know, people, animals, everything. It goes back to the story of Noah and the ark, the entire, every human on the planet except for 8. So every woman, child, you know, all that died, wiped out. And he's going back to these historic events in 2 Peter 2 saying, hey, remember these stories because I don't want you to make the same mistakes because right. he'll do it again.
Right.
You know, God hasn't changed. And so the whole thing's kind of throws out of the water for me. I think half the problem is in our time frame, we're just not used to that kind of thing. Everything's so clean and sterile, and we go get meat at a grocery store that's wrapped up in cellophane, and we don't have to cut the throat of the animal. And you know, I'd probably be a vegetarian if I had to, because I'm weak. I'm a you know wimpy little boy. I'm just saying, we're not used to blood, we're not used to violence. It's off somewhere else. It's
sure.
on a news channel that told us something happened over in, you know, the Middle East somewhere or wherever. And so we kind of project that onto God, say, well, God's different now. He's full of love and puppies and rainbows and
well, I mean,
and
to be times. Fair, though, like there's scripture that, like, I think leads people that direction, right? Like when Jesus talks about leaving the one for the 99, or you know what I'm saying? And like when send the little children to come to me, my burden is light. You know what I'm saying? Like all these things that sound very inviting. Right. And then it's not that Jesus does not speak of a judgment like he does actually quite a bit. Maybe we just lean in real heavy on the like it's hard holding both things to be true on a flat reading of scripture. It just kind of is.
There's some really bad doctrine where you've just raised your hand. You now are done with judgment and you can do whatever you want. And
that's not what I'm. That, I guess that's not what I'm thinking that people are thinking.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm saying that, like, fundamentally, I mean, like, even the guy that has known Jesus for almost my whole life, like, reading the Old Testament has a different feel to it than reading the New Testament for a lot of reasons.
I very recently struggled with this, and we've had this conversation before on the show where I've brought a similar point up where I'm like, man, I'm struggling with, as I'm working my way through the Old Testament, trying to right-size the holiness of God, right? And the uncleanness that comes with a broken and fallen world that forsook him or forsaked him, right? Like that made the wrong choice and became a sinful world because of the choices that were made at the beginning. And then like trying to figure out exactly right. Like Jesus very specifically, if you look at it a certain way, like it's inviting. It's meant to be like, hey, like you are forgiven through Jesus and all these different things. And like you would hope that as we go forth to the people that we're telling them that like, hey, you're broken, but God can make you new and God can make you take away your sin and all this different stuff. And then I read stuff in the Old Testament where it's like, and then God was, his anger was like lit a flame in this situation of rebellion. And then he caused a plague to happen. And very specifically, many people died, and somebody like Abraham had to walk in and be like, well, wait, whoa, what if you did it this way? Or Moses comes in and intercedes and goes, God, like, please look on us with mercy and, like, remember your people and remember your covenants and your promises. And, like, it's been interesting to try and walk through that and right-size that, because then I keep running into the thought of, like, we're told to fear the Lord, and, like, I struggle with that because I don't naturally have a fear of God, admittedly, because like I really feel like the love of God and I feel like I'm accepted because of him and I like talking about that stuff and I want other people to see that kind of stuff. And so I totally get your point and it makes plenty of sense to me, especially as I'm trying to talk to people about this, right? Like, like you said, someone who's been walking through this for years and has been trying to take a step back and go, okay, like, well, first off, I'm going to come at scripture understanding that it's not God's responsibility to make things make sense to me. Mm-hmm. It is my responsibility to accept this because it is God's word and he is the one who is just and right. And then I have to let like my heart be humbled and go, this one's rough, Father. Like this one's rough to take in. But like, I'm going to let you instruct me. I don't know how to have that kind of conversation with somebody who I'm trying to tell about Jesus and tell them that they can be saved through that. But then also be like, but if you run into a scripture that's kind of rough, like humble yourself and shut up and just let him like instruct you on who he is through it.
I mean,
and sometimes
I mean, God
that's hard.
Spent centuries giving us story and
of course
example after example of here's my standard and if you don't meet it you're done, you're toast. Bad things happen, and that's the more you understand that, the better you understand grace. It's like, man, this grace is a big deal.
Yeah,
I mean, I genuinely deserve everything bad that's going to ever happen. I deserve the plague. I deserve fire. I deserve all the stuff, whatever, you know. And he's like, yeah, but I went ahead and took that for you,
right?
You know, so it's not that God changed or anything. It's that he says, man, I love you so much. I love them too, but I had to do what I had to do, you know, and I'll still do it. That's what Peter was saying. Don't forget, you're going to get the same thing.
Yep.
But
yeah,
I want to forgive you and I want to save you. And that's where the fear is an awe and a reverence thing. It's not scared. It's a, man, that's a deep appreciation for, whoa.
Yeah, yeah. There's beauty in that. Like there's beauty in understanding that like,
because I have a turd.
This same God that exacted his truthful revenge on a people that were rebelling against him, or even sometimes not like an open rebellion. Sometimes it's like, hey, you did something I told you not to. Like the guy that died when he touched the Ark of the Covenant,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like it's falling, and you would think, yeah, grab it, because like you don't want it to fall. It's sacred. It's important. It's God's seat. Mm-hmm. But like he died because the instruction very specifically was like, this is mine. Don't yep. touch it.
And New Testament God would do the same thing. He said, no, that's really what it said. Yeah. I really said, don't touch it.
And maybe this does.
Sorry, revenge might have been the wrong word. I know you. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, maybe this just does point to like our culture that like puts a lot of weight in feelings.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But like it for sure, just from our modern lens, it doesn't matter. Like what you're saying is true, but like it feels different. Like yep. on the read, it feels for sure right. different.
So let me. Maybe this helps. Is in the presence of Old Testament. Let's call it violence.
Sure.
I think there's three in my mind. There's three reasonable reactions. There are three reasonable questions that might come from it. One, because if you believe that it doesn't fit your understanding of the character of God, the question is this all? Is it real? Is God even real? Because like right. I don't. These do not. The multiple things don't feel like they go together for me, and so maybe the whole thing is made up.
Sure.
Could be reaction number one. Two. Maybe it has nothing to do with being real, but now but brings the question: is God good?
Yeah,
if I'm supposed to believe this story, and I would, this seems terrible. Women and children and whatever, and Canaanite, whether it's Canaanites, Israelites, some of these decisions, like, is God good? And the third question is probably: can even God be understood, or is he capricious? Because frankly, like the capricious meaning, like, right. does he just make random decisions?
Yep.
That his character cannot be determined. They're good because God did them, not because they have any consistent good. Because like a lot of the, like if you think of other deities that have been worshipped, you're supposed to think of their behavior as justified simply because of who they are, which is something you could make the case for Yahweh. But actually, I think it removes a consistency in God's character that we are supposed to be able to understand. Yeah. God is predictable. The one of the key characteristics that stands out between him and other gods of the time or gods that have been represented at all is that God is not capricious. He just doesn't like randomly make decisions to right. do something. There is a standard of which his character implies, of which he acts within, not that he's constrained by, but it is evident. So if I had to deal with those three things, and does that seem right? Those three things seem kind of like,
I can agree to it.
Even real? If he's real, is he good? And if he's good and real, he appears capricious because he's making some of these things seem petty sure. or small or whatever. So if I were to deal with those things, here's how I might think of it. One, context. We lack a little bit of context. I think we have it. It's just harder to take in that the violence, the thing where violence is perpetrated upon humans stands out to us. But like take the manna example where they end up choking on the manna, right? The Israelites did not have a question as to whether God was real.
Right.
They knew he's real. And even if he did no good things, the presence of his justice is the evidence that he's real. Whether they agree with it or not, whether they think he's good or not, they're not questioning whether he's real or not. And
sure.
so if you're going to accept the biblical stories that represent some sort of judgment upon humanity that God takes from an earthly perspective, then there's no reason for you to throw out the provision of the manna to begin with, the Passover, the notion of the freeing from Egypt,
yep.
the miracles, the water out of the rock at Meribah, like any of these types of things. So you know, so if you accept the one thing, it can't be the justification that God isn't real because it's something that you wouldn't have done. From the same book came these things that he did that were good.
Sure.
So if you're going to throw out, if you believe God is not real because of negative things that you believe exist in the Bible, that doesn't hold because
yeah.
you would have chucked the positive things. So if you're not going to believe in him, it can't actually have anything to do with Old Testament violence. The second question becomes, is God good? This is a harder question.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I might submit to you that what it lacks is a little bit of context. The Israelites did not question whether God was good. Right, the same people who fell, or the same group of people who fell under judgment
mm-hmm.
because of collecting sticks on the Sabbath, or
I forgot about that one.
Right? Yeah,
or overindulging in
stone him.
In stuff that showed up right in food. Like they're the same group that 2 days before then collected manna from the ground.
Yeah,
they knew that it wasn't there the day before. They knew that it was coming at God's hand. There was not a question whether God was good, and so by in context, they actually had an easier time with some of these judgments than we do, because we take the highlighter to the judgment, and you don't convert sure. at the same time go, God provided.
Yeah.
Right. And so, again, I don't think you can, you can't, the question of whether God was good, they had the evidence of the goodness, just like they had the evidence of the judgment. This isn't a thing that an Israelite is bothering.
Sure.
With.
Right.
But we're struggling with, because you did not collect manna yesterday.
Yeah.
Your grandpa was not led out of Egypt. The waters did not spread across for them to walk through. Right. So it's easier for us to focus on a context that says we would not behave this way. I cannot personally think of a means of which this or reason that this judgment is okay. But you also did not participate in any of the goodness that was very clear and evident to those folks.
Sure. Right.
Israelites always repent. It takes them a long time. It's difficult for them to get there, but they always repent. And what are they often doing? The prophets will do the same thing. They're always pointing back to, but did you remember God's hand here and God's hand here and God's hand here, right? And so this is why it's important for us. It's easy in this room. Maybe it's not easy, but in this room, I can read Old Testament scriptures and things where I'm like, I don't see that same thing quite happening today. The world is different in the presence of Jesus dying on the cross. But I can look back at that and go, God can be trusted. And so even if it hits my sensibilities, my modern cultural sensibilities different, I believe God can be trusted.
Right.
But I came to that conclusion because I've seen throughout my life that God is trustworthy. If you're someone who does not have the experience of those types of things, and then you start reading Joshua straight up, you lack the context because you're not an Israelite and you've not lived a life to otherwise notice within God's people and within his provision in your own life that he is good, that gives you a context for that. And so that's where we need to be gracious about and why it's important that God's people do God's things, because you actually start to help provide people a context of which they can understand those types of things. And like that feels like cheating to some people. Oh, well, you're writing off because, well, you've had this experience that God is good, so you're willing to overlook this. No. That is the context of which I understand that type of thing. That's the caution. Three, is God capricious? Does God just randomly go, you know what? I'm just sick of this stick collector on the Sabbath. And so is he petty? Is he small for going after things like this? If he's God and humans are so fallible and he's aware of that, what's with the earthly judgment upon some of these things that seem to be just reflections of human fallibilities? I think it's a great question. I think it's a harder question, because would I, knowing the fallibilities of, say, my 8-year-old, what does my patience look like for them and their behavior? Okay, fair. So then it becomes then we got to think about, again, what is God doing with some of these things? Well, one, I think it's wise to consider that the presence of earthly judgment is not always the same thing as the presence of eternal judgment. So because God took an action for protection of his people or the people around them to stop a particular thing on earth, I think we do not have enough in scripture to say, I know that then they are eternally separated from Yahweh. So he can take an earthly measure that is not the same thing as eternal separation. And so it would be different if it felt like dude who collected sticks on the Sabbath definitely made an earthly mistake. Is it condemnable for forever separation from Yahweh? I don't know about it. We don't have the implication of that. But do we also get a God who goes, look, you've got to purge the evil from your camp? Because the presence of evil, the presence from disobedience, the presence of humans, especially in such a thing as his people are supposed to be a light to others. And so is it important that people who are misrepresenting that to the other people in the camp and to the people outside of that are stopped because it's bigger than just that person's behavior?
Sure, yeah.
Yes, right. So and we see this actually to Dan's point. What do you see in the early church? Look at Ananias and Sapphira.
Mm-hmm.
That's the type of thing where you're like, hey, didn't God maybe over, like they just kind of said they would bring the whole thing, but they didn't really bring the whole thing. Isn't that kind of a human thing to do to keep a little back for themselves? Yes. There's a preciousness.
I just fell dead.
There's a preciousness to the early church and the protection of that movement and its purity that God takes an action in it that we would be like, whoa. I think people do this probably all the time, and they're not falling down dead. Again, it's God's discretion on what way and how firmly on the earth things need to be protected.
Okay, that's a great point, though, because it does tail off right? Like, it's very evident in the beginning stages of what Israel is designed to be.
Yep.
It's also more evident in the beginning stages of what the early Christian church yes. was designed to be. And then it's like it's very similar to raising a kid, right? Like, you follow it around everywhere. You tell it no when you don't want it to. Like, but like, by the time your kid gets to be closer to adult, you're not going to like follow around to every stove and go, hey, you know, stop this, right? You've been set on a path and a way to live and a way to face to live a life, and like, he's setting it up for success, or at least a blueprint to know what his heart is
yeah.
and what he intends for the designing of his chosen people, Israel, and the early Christian church.
Yes. So I think the consideration then is God, how does God communicate where lines are at, how their behavior impacts the world around them? Well, there's a physical representation of that judgment, of the impact of God said not to do a thing, you did a thing, there's a physical consequence. Think about, we talked about this, I want to say maybe 3 months ago. Saul decides he's waiting to go to a battle, and he Samuel's supposed to come in and make the sacrifice. Samuel's running late. Saul's like, I don't have my answer. I made the sacrifice. And then Saul shows up. And Saul, like, the reason Saul loses his kingship is that. It's
right.
that. He goes, take it away from him. I wish I wouldn't have put this guy in, because he didn't wait for Samuel, who was running late. And Samuel basically looks at him and goes, look, do you think you know better than what God said to do? And
right.
and Saul goes, look, I did not want to go into battle without honoring God, without offering our sacrifice. In Saul's mind, this is like, hey, I'm trying to do yeah. the right thing. And Samuel very clearly goes, except for it's not what he told you to do. And it's enough that you don't get to be the king anymore. Do the Israelites, are they going to remember this? Are they going to remember the rebellion of Korah? Are they going to remember the guy collecting sticks on the Sabbath? Yes. Did that judgment then protect future folks in some way or another from continuing to perpetuate things that otherwise could have made their way and totally like took a whiz in everybody's pot? Yes. I think similar things about the our descriptions that we get of the Canaanites. Like, yeah, he said to go, and the Amalekites too. He said to go in, and he said to wipe out the folks. Okay, I think God is good. I don't worry so much about the children and the women and stuff, because I believe God is, his intent is for righteousness. So I think he worked it out in whatever way, I don't know, right? But do I know that the Canaanite religion and its child sacrifice and mm-hmm. sexual immorality were pervasive and growing into the world? Is there a protection that God has done to do judgment on sure. those people? Is it just so, well, now the Israelites can move into the apartment? No, it's not just that.
Right.
He moved light into the neighborhood. And to do that, you got to clear out the things that are poisoning the neighborhood to do. You understand? And so, again, now you chase it around, because the Israelites continue to fail and God continues to step in. And you see the judgment where he moves them out completely
right.
from the land that he promised, because they were not faithful in it.
So the thing that we probably get stuck on, right, is like, you're exactly right. Like, they get sent away. They get taken over by Babylon. You know, like, that is more palatable. You know what I'm saying? Yes. Like, on the whole, it was like, sure. hey, God set up a land for you. You did not follow him. You did not acknowledge him as God. You will be moving out of this land. And like, you're like, yeah, that seems right and fair. But like, when people were getting killed, like, we're like, well, now they don't have a chance to fix it. They don't have a chance to repent. They don't have a chance to like get out of this mistake that they made. And like, some of that is indwelling look at ourselves that goes, I make a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
If I just happened to be around in that time period of the world, I would certainly be dead. Certainly.
Right.
And yeah. so, but once again, if we're looking at it as is like an earthly consequence does not necessarily mean an eternal consequence, right? Like, if God is like setting up his ways and trying to like show what his sense of justice and good and right means, he has to be able to do that somehow. And predating a Bible, right? You're right. These are just stories passed down from so-and-so. You're like, man, did you hear what happened to
yeah.
X? You know, and you're, and like, I'm looking at it as, I think Sarah, daughter of Korah, like got unnecessarily punished. Well, to be honest with you, sin has that same effect now, right? Where people are unnecessarily affected by the sins of other people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? And it still catches them now. And Jesus just said, yeah, I died for that so Korah and his daughter don't have to die for that, to make that relationship possible with Yahweh.
Yeah, and I think where we get into, where it becomes difficult is that I think the examples are clearer. You see that moving through the Old Testament, primarily because, like, you've got the people of Israel acting as both a followers of Yahweh, but also like a nation state, right?
Yeah.
So like there's rules that govern how you're to live and to work, the influence that the nation state has. Like we're spies today. Like we're not – it's a covert operation. We do not own the country. And so like it's a little bit of a different setup. But like also the power of God's name carries differently. You notice when the ark gets – I'm listening to 1 Samuel today, so like these examples are on my mind. But like when the ark gets taken and it gets put in the temple of Dagon, right? And the thing
starts toppling,
falling on itself, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And those guys go, "Oh yeah,
that's Yahweh.
That was the God who got them out of Egypt. Right. We got to get out of this thing." And remember, they come up with these things that they're going to offer it,
yep,
like
right.
back out. But like there was God's name went with his people as their behavior, right?
Sure,
so
yeah.
like. It's culturally, it's how what's what you're dealing with. Is that same thing helpful, necessary, have the same impact today? It doesn't seem like it, although, like, I don't know enough. God would know. He'll do what he wants to do
sure.
in all the places. But, like, I think that's probably culturally this ends up looking different on how we think or interact with that. Or even culturally, like, what it meant. Like, if you got kicked out of your land, did Babylon go,
yeah.
oh, yeah, yeah, sounds like a judgment upon his people, no problem. Mm-hmm. No, not necessarily. We wouldn't even think that today. But if you saw a god come and like, attack other gods or, like,
right.
have an army be wiped out, I it's the language they're speaking. And so I do trust God contextually in those types of things, but I don't even have to just go, I just trust him and that's good enough for me. I think there's other contextual things that help us to understand
sure.
that are different than our own culture, but I think allow us not to just take what feels like the easy way out going, well, he can just be trusted. I think it's true, but I actually think there's more to it than that.
Mm-hmm. You know, you look at in Revelation 2, you know, we were talking about Israel and how they were moved from the land and all the, you know, all the things. It's kind of the New Testament equivalent of that is Jesus writing the letter to Ephesus saying, hey, you know, I'm going to remove your lampstand
yeah.
if you don't repent. And it's like how many churches, it's just not visible. We don't know
right.
it. Mm-hmm. But how many churches out there have no spirit left, right?
Yeah.
They've
yeah,
got
yeah,
a sign,
yeah.
they're going through the actions, they sing their songs, whatever they're doing. Wow. But God left a long time ago.
Yeah,
you know he was no longer invited, and I think it's the same thing. We're just not maybe perceptive enough to see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not writing down and God left the ex church.
Yeah,
you,
right,
you know,
right.
We're like, man, what's wrong with them? You know, we just you know. So I think it's still going on.
Yeah, I think so too. And but I will say, like all that said, I get that this is difficult. It hits my sensibilities because you would think the same God in the New Testament that says, look, it's my desire that everyone come to me. And thus is like we've got John saying, come quickly, Lord Jesus. And then there's the back in your mind. You're like, oh, but if he waited, his mercies are new every morning. I need another morning so that Ted can come to Jesus.
Yeah,
totally. And so like, but here's the thing. That's what you're built for. That's for you. Your job is to look out. The thing that you can handle is to look out in hope and to desire for the opportunities that people would come to Jesus just like you were able to. You
right.
can't actually handle the judgment. It's why that when it hits you and you see that there was a judgment upon people, your heart breaks because it's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to do that. Only God can be trusted on which those times are appropriate. You've seen humans do this, and this is where you get dictatorships, right? The power of life and death in human hands is not handled well. And so I think the reaction is because that's what you're supposed to have. That's the way – and the representation we have of Jesus too is like that's how he's looking at the world. Now, certainly God holistically – has to be able to deal with evil. He has to be able to say the this much poison.
We want him to deal with evil.
Exactly. In fact, we pray for that. You pray for we've talked about this before, but like you pray that the guy who's beaten his wife, like you pray for it to stop. You want God to reach in and stop that man. And it's okay because you agreed with God's level of interference. And because you agreed what that guy was doing was morally wrong, you don't have a problem that God stepped in to stop it. But you like, well, the guy who gathered sticks, the problem isn't that God, we care that God interjects in the world and that he executes justice. We're not comfortable on the thing that the guy did, that it's bad enough to justify how
right.
God reacted. That's
right.
our real problem.
Yeah.
But part of that is, again, we don't really have a good appreciation for God's holiness. We don't have a good appreciation for like those people having to see God act physically in their midst for them to to contemplate, understand, because I get to read the story of the guy in the sticks. They didn't have their story to read. It had to happen, right? Now, I do think it's wrong to look at the entirety of the Old Testament as if it's all posturing for me.
Like, right.
Oh, well, they had to die so that I would know better. That's arrogant.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's great.
But there was a
God was thinking of me.
Yeah, there's a practical reason those were happening at the time. It was for them. But like we benefit from a different
yes,
way.
Right.
Because of the mediums that we have, the scripture that I can read, I don't have to run afoul of those things to understand the consequence. But here's the deal. We're almost missing out on the lesson because we do spend our time disagreeing with God's actions at the time. And so I think it's difficult. I think you're made to be. I think you're made to find that difficult. I think it's in your heart. You're supposed to look at people in a gracious way and want for them what God wants for them. And so I think it's if it didn't hit you initially where you're like, oh yeah, that seems totally fine. Then I think you're missing something that God is meant for you. But then I think you do have to contextualize it.
So we're saying that like if you're reading through your Old Testament or you're new to the Bible. And you grew up, or your majority of the things that you know about God are coming from the character and stories told about Jesus. Like, it's okay to feel a way about some stuff in the Old Testament, but it's not okay to leave it there.
Yep.
And like, you should be digging in and realizing that it's the same God throughout. And so like, His character is consistent, and people are actually pretty consistent in the way that they rebel against Him.
Yeah.
And so like, all those things are okay. It's okay to have that question. It's okay to dig into why, and it's okay to talk it out and find people around you that know the scriptures, that have been walking with God for a while, that can help solidify the way that you're looking at things.
Yeah, and I would say that like you, whatever you're feeling, I know you don't do it very often, but just take a trip through the Minor Prophets. There are very few modern accusations against Yahweh that have not been leveled against Him by His own prophets.
Sure.
Representing the will of the people. Like, if you ever thought, God, where are you? How can all these things be going on around you? And it feels like you're silent. Yeah. Go check out Amos. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so you are in human company, even to people who have seen God act, to go, how are we supposed to understand this? This seems... We need your help understanding this. Where are you? Why are you behaving this way? Why haven't you done the things? Actually, there's another Samuel story where they're praying to go to battle, and they pray to God and like, hey, tell us whether you'll deliver into our hands or not. And the scripture goes, and God did not provide an answer that day. And they're like, yeah. What are we supposed to do? You've been there. Saul's been there. Jonathan's been there. And so, like, this is one of the reasons you can tell. If scripture was not real, you wouldn't write down most of this stuff. If you were just trying to control and manipulate people, you would not have God's prophets failing so hard,
right,
and accusing God of things. Like, it's the reality of trying to understand something that is much bigger than you. And God graciously doesn't just go, I'm Yahweh, suck it up. He's like, I get it. I get what you're saying. And this is where Job is helpful. Like, there's a reminder of God's perspective into the world. And so, like, the Bible doesn't shy away from some of these things. Don't feel guilty about thinking them. But let's go back to God with the question.
Not to jump back into it by any means.
Yep.
But, like, the Korah situation, right? Like, Korah's rebellion was under the perspective that they were saying, how do we know that Moses and Aaron are the only ones that God speaks to, right? Like, yes. What if He also speaks to us?
Yeah.
And that was the fight that was coming against it. What a dangerous situation that, like, if it becomes a thing that the people who are speaking to God are not the ones who are listened to as they are the ones speaking to God, like, of course that was put down quickly. Because then if it becomes a situation where all of them are hearing or saying that they're the ones hearing from God, and then they start getting a bunch of random direction and all this right. different stuff, and then the fact that, exactly right, they're becoming like this nation and have been in slavery for 400 years, have no idea how to take care of themselves, can't provide their own manna, will die in the wilderness on their own, or get killed by the kings that they're trying to pass through their land that just flat out go, no, we're an army against you and we'll murder you all. Like, of course there's a situation in which you have to set the example of, no, I speak to them, and they're the ones that you should hear when I speak to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't go off and think that everybody's talking about me, because you're all foolish and this will go horrible immediately.
I think that's a perfect example, right? Because, like, from our modern perspective, God tolerates this now. There's all kinds of people that claim to speak on Yahweh's behalf and definitely do not. You know, and so like he tolerates this. He allows this to be in his grace and his mercy. And so like to have such a stark reality that's different than the one that we're in, right? It just takes, there is a level of arrogance to the way that we read the Bible, right? Like we do kind of self-centerize it. And like, as we've talked through this, I just realized how much I definitely do that. But like the thought is like, this is, people will say this is like, not my Jesus. My Jesus wouldn't do that, right? And like, it's a self-centered look, like as if you control the narrative of right. who Christ is.
My puppet Jesus.
Yeah like right. that's
genie.
But like, think about them saying the same thing in Deuteronomy. God would have smote them directly, right? My Yahweh would do this. Like, your Yahweh, rock on head. That's it. That guy's out.
You know, take that dude out from among you and kill him immediately.
Yeah, so and I guess one of the other things to consider, too, is that we're not getting every story. So, like, think of the end of the Judges.
Right.
Book of Judges, where it says everyone did what was right in his own eyes. You're telling me there's not false prophets in there? Right.
Sure. Yeah.
Like we know about this. And actually, Amos lodges a complaint about this. And there's the few other. Obadiah, I think, has got a complaint about this. And so what you don't see is the condemnation of those guys. You don't see that God strikes them down. And so are there few key points of which have persisted through the scriptures of the stories that we know about? Sure. But like, it's probably actually, you know, you wouldn't know. It's something to ask Jesus. But contextually, is God handling false prophets in sometimes like this today? Yeah, he probably is. Probably at the same level of which it happened, like at Korah's rebellion, except for everybody was in the same spot. You know what I'm saying? We're just all distributed out everywhere. And so, I think we just have to be careful. Some of it's a visibility issue. Some of it's contextually, like we're not getting every story that's out there. And so, you know, just because God stood in one thing as an example to his people doesn't mean that there's not another thousand within 50 years of Korah's rebellion of which God did not take earthly judgment.
Dang it. Now, every time I'm going to hear about like an earthquake that randomly happens in Chile and it was just in the middle of nowhere, I'm going to think, I wonder if there was a false prophet
out there. In there.
I wonder God's what like, Manuel did. Yeah.
It's like, hey, man, I sucked Korah and his entire rebellion up into Sheol. I'll do it again. It can be in the Andes this time, friend. Bye.
Yep. I know, and I think that is one of the risks that comes with this type of thing, too, is then, depending on who you are, you're looking for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right.
And all over the place. And you're getting yourself in a little bit of hot water. Because, again, it presumes a place of judgment that you just it's just not even your problem, man.
It's so hard, yeah.
Like, you got to say the thing that it exists, and it has to be clear of what the rescue looks like. But, like, when God decides to intercede in the world, when he chooses not to, the level of which he decides to do it, like— It's his ways and not my ways. It's his perspective, not mine, which is like the same justification he gets for choosing David. You're like, the way the world would look at this, we'd say, why didn't you step in on Hitler? For sure.
Right.
Like we'd say, why did not God do blah, blah, blah?
Right. Well, even Hebrews, you know, says to look at hardship as discipline from the Lord. And he's like, well, which ones? I mean, sometimes it's just hardship.
Yeah, right.
Discipline. You know, it's like, you know,
right.
It's the discernment part.
That's exactly right. Like it's difficult to say, and this is where people who don't handle scriptural well will do that kind of thing. They're like, oh,
the hurricane, see?
Yeah. Sorry, God's putting you through hardship. Or I'm just an idiot.
And yeah.
I'm
a
dumb or the choice. Commodities market is up and natural gas is high. You know what I'm saying? Right. Instead of going, this is a hardship, these corn prices.
Well, then there's the people that will use that as an opportunity to like tell people that something horrible happening in their life is God disciplining them and they should look towards it as, wow, count it all joy, friends, that we go through these things. Yeah. It's like, hey, man, my parents died. I don't believe that God was disciplining me for something. It's a fallen world. My parents made decisions that led them to the place that they were in. And it certainly led to me being able to find him a lot better because of some of those things. But like somebody walking up to me in that point in time and going, hey, man, your dad died actually so that you would be disciplined in your sin. And he was taken away in that specific situation because
right.
he
what
was
did
sinful.
You learn?
I'm like, what the heck, man? Because I've had that. I had that situation.
And yep. So, yeah. Yep. Hmm. All right. Hey, no joke, though. Like, I know this is hard, and especially Old Testament stuff. Especially, we start with Jesus, and then you make your way back. And again, we just, it's you got to read it, and it reads differently. Some of the literature is different. The way that it's, what it's communicating, how it's trying to communicate, understanding some of those things. Like, you get a deeper appreciation for Jesus by taking that stuff in, but it's hard. So look, if you lack of any other resources, let me offer you two things. One, hit it. If you got questions, hit up the complaint line. I'm guaranteeing whatever qualm you may have with the Old Testament, more people have.
Yes.
It's pretty common. I felt, to be honest, I felt some of that felt super risky to me. I would say the same reason when I approached Revelation, I thought this thing could either significantly deepen my faith or it could tear it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I would say, like, the further I dug into Revelation and then into the Old Testament, I don't think I'm kooky about it. Like, I think we're in this room, we're pretty, we look at it, I don't want to say like logically or reasonably, I say I think we're taking it as it's intended.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the Old Testament. Like, I'm not trying to provide an apologetic
right.
for making excuses on God's behalf. I'm trying to read it as I think it, what it's actually trying to communicate.
Sure. Yeah.
And some of that requires you actually taking in some of the context around it, knowing what's going on in politically or in that world, and actually for the most part at least, not reading as like it happened in Ohio in 1998, because you're probably reading it wrong if that's how you're taking it in. And so that does take, it does take work. It's the reason God has teachers and resources and things to help with that, because that's something we actually have to bring forward with us to understand. So hit us up on the complaint line if we can be of any help there. I would also, I would recommend the Bible Project. They handle these things pretty well. Just they have a podcast, also some videos and things, and they do a pretty good job of helping you sit in context. The thing that I would tell you that they do is they are pretty gracious with people who've got are trying to approach it in multiple ways, and I think they do a pretty good job of recognizing how someone might take it in and kind of cover that. So just do a search for the Bible Project, check out the podcast, just look for the, sometimes they'll do books of the Bible, overviews of the book of the Bible, which are good, that'll set you up to try to take it in well. But those, I would start there. And if you have questions on specific, like if you want commentaries and stuff on some Old Testament books, just shoot that to Complaint Line between Dan and I. I bet we've got something, like some commentaries that we probably trust. That would be good places to
not
start.
Not moving, Mike. We'll just pick our butts and sit over in the corner and go, hurt.
That sounds pretty cover.
Doug Moo. I would recommend Doug Moo.
Douglas Moo for Romans.
Douglas Moo for Romans specifically, but no other Moo for any other situation. N.T. Wright.
Okay. If you're going to do Doug Moo for Romans, one, I actually would grab the N.T. Wright commentary at the same time. Because there's a good balance between the two. N.T. Wright's more pastoral. But I'll tell you this, Doug Moo is actually pretty difficult. He's a pretty technical commentator. He's hard to get through. And so it depends what you need it for, but maybe don't start with Doug Moo.
Ben one time gave me a Doug Moo book to go through. I don't remember what it was for, but I have never felt more dumb in my entire life than when I like opened the book and I thought I brought intelligence to reading and then went, what?
That was the preface where he thanked his wife.
That was like the, hey, I'm going to tell you how to read this book. And I'm like, what? Do you have a how to read this book by chance? Like, is there a Doug Moo for Dummies? Because there's not. And it was rough.
I have given up on commentaries before like that. Like, I got started them and I'm like, nope.
You're not saying anything to me.
It has to be accepted. Like, and there's
read Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis and then have a good old time.
Those are great. I love C.S. Lewis.
C.S. Lewis speaks to me. C.S. Lewis speaks more to me, or Jesus speaks more to me through the Chronicles of Narnia than he does some of the Screwtape Letters and or Mere Christianity.
I follow C.S. Lewis.
And so maybe someday I'll be able to get those.
On Instagram, knowing full well it is not him.
I was going to say, he's been dead for a bit.
All right, you're listening live from The Path. Thank you for hanging out with us today. We probably would have continued that very conversation for another 45 minutes off air. And
right.
We thought, whatever, we'll just turn the mics on. We'll let you listen in on that particular one. It's a reminder that like we're here practically for our own purposes. These conversations are helpful to us. We're having them in our normal lives.
True.
So if they're helpful to you, great. But like we're having them anyway.
Well, we were talking like an hour, weren't we? Before
something like that. Yeah.
So yeah. That could have been bonus material.
Yep.
The amount of times that we've been like 2.5 hours late to starting the show and would have been like, why didn't we just turn the cameras on 2.5 hours ago?
Yeah. Yep.
We could have had 3 shows kicked out by now.
We should do that. I should just start chopping the show up at like 50 minutes and going, here's part 2 of last week.
Last week on Live from the Path.
Hey, were we going to get to that article that Dan sent over?
Oh, yeah. There was one. Well, there were two. There one with the demolition of the these mega churches in the Dallas area. Oh. And then there was one about...
Kids respecting the parents.
Yes. Which
these phrases got to go. I want to do that one.
Okay. All right. Dan, do you have it?
I didn't read it.
I sent it to our...
Okay, hold on. I got it. I got it. I'll pull it. I did read it.
I didn't. I'm so sorry.
Because I do.
I skimmed it and I thought, this looks interesting.
Now, it's weird. Here's what's weird about it. Is like the website it's from.
Yeah.
I don't know what Dan does on a normal day, but the website is Global English Editing.
I do that all the time.
GEEditing.com. And I'm like, okay.
It's one of those, I actually read something, whatever I was interested in, and then it like popped that up next. Like, here, you'll probably like this. I'm like, huh. Well, interesting title.
Apparently, Ben feels confident enough in that shirt to be able to comment on the weirdness of other things in his life, yeah, but not on himself.
No, no, I feel great. I feel powerful. I feel like Dan and I empower each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You look like you found a biology book that had something to do with like flowers that are birds of paradise, and then you just ripped that book, that page out, copied it, and turned it into a shirt seven times over.
Here's what I'm going to tell you. Someone tried to insult me and called me Don Johnson, but I took that as a compliment.
I don't know who that is.
What? I got that on Sunday.
Be more.
No kidding.
I was like,
be more offended that I have no idea who Don Johnson is.
He's from Miami Vice.
Yeah, you think I've watched Miami Vice?
I was about to ready to sing the opening theme song to Speed, and I don't know how that ties in.
I also don't know what Speed is.
Dun,
so.
Dun, 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 dun. Where that bus gets running away, Keanu Reeves is on it. It's got a bomb on there.
Never seen
You've not seen the movie Speed?
There's a bomb on your bus.
You know, I've never actually watched it, but I know enough of it. It's been on TV 100 times. It looks boring. They're like on a bus.
Mm. Boring? So, there's a bomb on there, Dan. Yeah. What kind of excitement do you need?
Same situation that people believe there should be 9 Fast and Furious movies.
Once it gets over 55, it can't go below 55 because the bomb is enabled.
Oh, now I must watch it. All right, what's this article?
It's a good movie. Okay. All right. 5 reasons if you didn't watch Speed, you probably got baptized as an adult.
Dun, 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 dun,
if you want your child to respect you as they get older, say goodbye to these 7 habits. You got to knock it off or your kid's not going to respect you when you get older. Here we go.
Oh, I'm going to tell you a story right quick. these kids of mine. So one time, this is my biggest parenting mistake. It's like indwelled in them. But like Ella was a wee tyke, and I can't remember how old she was. She was like, I don't know, 7, 8, whatever. Told repeatedly not to use Sharpie markers on the table, right?
Yeah. Mm.
And so, because she colors outside the lines, it gets it all over the table. And so, she does it again, right? She just is like a repeat offender. There's Sharpie marker over the table. So, I always decided, as I was growing up, I always felt that my parents, like, punished me with something that was unrelated to the thing that I did. And I hated it, right? So, like, you clean your room or you can't go stay the night over at John's house. And I'm like, what? That doesn't seem like a fair... Right? Like, if I acted poorly at John's, then maybe you should take away John. But, like, I always like the punishment to fit the crime in some capacity.
Yeah.
And so, in response to what Ella had done, I said, hey, like, we've talked about this multiple times, and I feel like you're not taking it in. So, like, if you can't treat the table in the way that it was designed to be treated, you're going to have to eat on the floor.
Yeah.
And so, I had her eat her dinner on the floor. And the children bring it up 10 years later as if it is the number one topic at their therapy session. Right? They're like, oh, one time my dad made me eat on the floor. I'm like, why did I do that?
Yeah, give context.
Do you remember the reason why? Because I was eating during prayer time. I go, stop it. That is not the reason you were on the floor. Like, there's no possible way that I got
sound so
fired
bad.
Up for about it. I'm like, there's no way I did that. They're like, it's probably because I'm like, and then her sister rolled in and be like, it's because you wrote Sharpie marker all over the table. Don't you remember that? No, I don't remember that. I go, how convenient. You remember the time I put you on the floor? So I tied the punishment with the crime together, like in a perfect parenting fashion. And then now it's just abuse from 10 years ago where the whole other family got to sit at the table because they didn't put marker all over it. And then she had to sit at the floor. And I'm like, I'm tired of you guys bringing this up.
Okay. Let's see if one of these would have prevented that particular situation.
I'm ready.
Okay. Let's see, if you want your child to respect you, you got to say goodbye to these 7 habits. First one, being overly authoritative.
Get off the floor.
maintaining discipline is crucial when raising children, but there's a thin line between discipline and dictatorship. Often parents fall into the trap of establishing an overly authoritative environment. We might think it's best way to maintain order, but in the long run, it can lead to a lack of respect. When children feel like their voices are not heard, they start seeing their parents as oppressors rather than mentors. Don't get me wrong, setting boundaries is important, but it's equally key to allow your child some autonomy. Let them make some decisions and learn from their mistakes. That way, your child will not only respect you more as they grow older, but they'll also develop valuable life skills.
I want my children to simultaneously feel like they can make decisions in certain situations, but then to always recognize that my authority is there. And I don't mean that from the perspective of I'm lording over them and taking away their autonomy. You can have autonomy and have someone over you with authority. Those are not contentious points.
I mean, here's the thing. You're trying to raise them to have God as an authority in their life. And so, like, that's not an easy behavior. as a broken human, right? Like you're trying to be under someone's authority. You do have to teach them how to do that. And that's difficult.
Yeah. I will say this is one of the, I thought I was going to get in trouble with this because this came up in our a logic class that I taught to some high school kids. I said, like, I consider the, I am, you have to do it because I'm your dad, to be bad parenting, generally speaking. Because it relies completely on authority.
Yeah.
And it does two things. One, it allows you to say that, like, if you're teaching your kid to think, like, logically and thoughtfully through things, and then you get to subvert that completely because of your authority, mm-hmm. like, that's bad. Like, that's the exact thing you would want them not to do, is just to blow up all good thinking just because of who someone is. That's how they find, you know, follow despots in their life or get bad boyfriends or something. But the second thing it does is that actually it lacks humility, because I'm okay being wrong where God is right. And so, like, if I transverse something that God said was good in my relationship with my kids, it is not a weakness for me to humble myself and say such a thing and say, I did not handle that well.
Right.
I was angry when I should have been. I was not patient when I should have been. And so my humility in following God is a much better example than trying to portray the fact that I cannot be wrong. That's dumb. That's a false thing. And it gives them the impression that that's how they're supposed to interact with somebody else's parents. Mm-hmm. And so I actually, that is the problem. I don't mind at all saying, so like take an example, if I told one of my kids, we're not going to get you a cell phone you're just not old enough. I might be able to say, we're just not doing it because I'm your dad. And a dad says no. But I'm going to use some of that, but not all of it. I have no problem saying, look, I'm your dad. I believe this to be a risk to you. I understand that you do not agree with me, but because I am responsible for your well-being, I'm open to being wrong at some point in the future. But right now, this feels like the right line, and that's why I'm making the decision that I'm making. That's mm-hmm. not me saying I'm infallible. That's not saying that you are going to have to abide by it because I am responsible for you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different vibe than I'm your dad, and you're going to do what I say because I said it. I think that's lazy.
It's huge. I think there's two approaches that parents tend to take. One is they tell the kid children what to do. Here's what you're going to do. Here's your list. You know, here's how you act. Whatever. You know, that list is, yep. And it's an authoritative thing because I said so. That's why. But it doesn't matter. Don't ask. Or you're teaching them how to live and make choices and think on their own, which is basically what you were just saying. And in that, you give them some space when you know they're going to make a choice that, man, that's not the best idea. You know, but you also know it's in a limited capacity. Like when one of our kids was really young, they had like $5. And it's like, you get to do whatever you want with this. They went to the mall. They bought like these white gloves, you know, dress-up gloves. We're like, that's the stupidest thing ever. But we let her do,
let
it.
Do it.
Sure, yeah.
And within a month, she was like, I don't know why I got these stupid gloves, you know.
That's right.
That was a $5 lesson that to this day she talks about, you know, because like, you will not get those gloves because we said so. You know, we thought, no, but we weren't doing that. You give them room to breathe and think and learn. When they're in under your authority, when yeah, okay, I can cover that $5. When it's a car, 10 years later, it's going to be more challenging.
Yep. But,
yeah. Right. Yeah. If any part of what I said came off as though I was saying that I want them to always know that they're under my authority, means I'm dad and what I say goes.
Dad goes. Oh yeah.
I didn't catch that, but okay, people good. Do that.
I was
going to
say,
because
that's certainly not what I said, nor what I meant. And I think there's a certain level of reading into what I said that might have been done there.
No, I didn't catch that.
Okay, just making sure, because that's certainly not what I meant by that at all.
I would just swap. What I would swap is they are most certainly your responsibility, and your boundaries should look like that. But part of your responsibility, like we struggle with this, I think, to a certain extent at my house, is that when you're trying to guide your kids into what are the right and wrong things, like you have to have the ability for them to be confident in their ability to pick it out when you're not around.
Right.
And so if you're to Dan's example, if you're constantly, if your barriers to them are so small that they cannot fail, even impartially.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The only thing they're going to know is, like, I cannot make decisions on my own. If my mom and dad does not explicitly tell me, Old Testament, exactly what I can or cannot do, mm-hmm. then I cannot make good moral decisions. And what you want is confident people who can go, look, I know what it looks like to make mistakes, and I'm going to choose. I can make this decision on my own, and I can do so where other people are pressuring me to make a different decision. I cannot be pressured.
Yeah.
Because I know, and so if you don't give them enough leeway, they can't learn that.
Yeah, sure.
Both of my children thanked me when they got to college because we approached life that way. You know, like, hey, well, they say the phone thing. Here's why we have an issue with the phone. There's things you don't understand yet. Yeah. Yada, yada, yada. And at least when they didn't like it, they didn't agree with it, but it made sense.
Yep.
So, you know, okay, all right, we'll do it. But then they got to college and were surrounded by kids who just had authoritative parents, and those kids were wild.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there was no one there to say no.
Right.
So therefore, I'll do it all.
Yeah, yep. And they've never been presented with any kind of autonomy before, any kind of transparency in decision-making, things like that. It was just always fences and blinders.
Yep.
And so once those things were broken, they were freaking stallion running. So,
And I do, like, I'll give you another example just in case this is helpful. So, like, just pick a kid in my family. They've got something that bothers their stomach, whether it's dairy at times, gluten at times, just depends on the kid. I think, like, the younger they are, the more we're likely to go, look, I got to deal with you having a stomach ache later on, and so I'm you can't, no ice cream or whatever it is. But, like, the older they get, if they recognize the impact of eating a sandwich of wheat bread or something, if they look at it and go, worth it, okay. Like, you know what I'm saying?
And it's their pain, right?
That's right.
Their eyes are open.
And if I, as long as like, the same, this is where... I'm not going to the next day go, they're like, oh, I can't do anything because I ate the bread. I'm like, well, that was a mistake, but you still have to do all the things you're responsible for today. I'm not going to lighten that up because it's part of the way that they learn to draw their own boundaries. But if that kid goes, you know what, it's totally worth it. I was out with my friends and we're eating sub sandwiches and I want to, and I'm totally going to, you're not going to hear a critique from me. Go ahead. It's your life. Like, you're old enough to know the difference,
right?
But I'm not going to coddle that decision. You do have to deal with the impacts of it. And then go ahead.
Yeah.
Totally fair.
Okay. I'm not sure my wife and I actually agree on that particular one. So,
oh, no.
Don't take that one to the bank. That's what I think.
7 parenting styles that you and your wife might not agree on.
Which I think, actually, it's an interesting thing. And I do think in some ways this is more difficult for ladies because it does tend to be that ladies are closer to kids when they're younger. And there's a style of parenting that, like, you need to be effective for younger children.
Yes. Nurturing thing.
It's funny. You make fun of the dads. The dads treat 5-year-olds like they're teenagers. Well, like, he'll do the right thing. No, he won't. And
it's like,
you keep an eye on him. But there's a transition of which, like, the way this is at least the story in my mind. like the older the kids get, you have to be able to have your hands off a little bit. You have to have them trial and error and stuff. Dads are actually, in some ways, dads get a ticket for being way too harsh on this stuff when it comes to how they interact with, like, boys and other external situations. But I think also dads are just a little bit softer, lighter touch when it comes to that. But moms have to go from a place of being the protector, the provider.
Right.
I kept them, you know, healthy, and I kept them fed, and I kept them disciplined so they don't make a boob out of themselves out of the coat. I mean, like, when do you stop doing that and leave them to the risks of the world? It gets riskier the older they get. And so it's very difficult, I think, for moms to pull that back because they had to be so good at it in a certain way the younger the kids were. And so I think and I say that because I think it's a difficult transition because the raising as the younger was a righteous thing. I think that's the risk to moms. I think the risk to dads is actually being too light of a touch to the younger children.
Yeah.
All right, two.
Never making it through this.
Not practicing what you preach. I remember how this one hit home for me. I remember how my daughter used to love drawing. One day she drew on the wall and I scolded her for it. Yet later that week she saw me marking measurements on the wall for a new painting. She was confused and asked me why I could draw on the wall and she couldn't. This doesn't seem like
a bad example.
This dude is like, I got one good idea for an article.
AI, help me write this.
Okay, yeah, we're going to skip that one. Now, I do think.
Hold on. Ben has a salient point for this waste of a point.
No, the point's good. The example's
bad. Consistency is important.
Right.
Yeah.
Right point, wrong scripture.
Yeah.
I think this becomes worse as you get older, as you can get away with being a hypocrite until your kids are old enough to know the difference.
Yeah,
they can sniff that out.
Yeah, and basically because it rolls up to the same thing, like, do it because I said so, not because, like, if it was the right thing, why aren't you behaving that way?
Yeah.
And so, and I do think, again, it does you a disservice. If your kids call you out on your hypocrisy, You should check whether they're right. And if right, you should go, you're right.
Yeah.
And like, and maybe there's a reason, maybe there's a nuance for it, and you should share that.
Yeah.
But like, there's no following Jesus justification for you to puff up at your children.
Right.
If you need to be humbled, then accept it from them. I know it's innate. Like, I don't want my kid to have one over on me. You're thinking about it wrong. Do not be antagonistic towards your children. Be humble in the sight of God, and if they're right, then repent.
I have too many examples of children who grew up and left the faith because all they got was a fake example growing up.
Right.
It's like, you acted one way at church, and you told us to do church and all the stuff, and then you obviously didn't live it.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, if they can't see Jesus through you.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, warts and all.
Yep. Yep. I agree. I believe Jesus agrees with me here. Your humility is powerful. And so as parents, just be cautious. Like, you're going to have a hard time getting your kids to respect you. Like, it doesn't mean you're not parents and you don't provide boundaries and stuff.
Right.
But like, if you're aiming for, I don't want them to have one over on me, you're fundamentally thinking about your kids incorrectly. But I know how you got there. Like, I get it. I get it. That once they get real skilled at talking at you, it feels like I'm being dominated by
but
this.
I'm being disrespected.
And you might be. And like, you should not
check
be
your fragility at the door.
Well, but here's reality. It's like, you shouldn't be disrespected by your children.
Right.
And you need to help them understand that it's not okay to act like that towards other people, because every argument I've ever had with my teenage daughters, where I've thought, you know, I should have handled that differently, I'm only half wrong. They were also wrong. And that's the reason I reacted the way I did. I'm very rarely like way out of left field. But how I handled it, I needed to apologize for. But they still had something that like they still needed to deal with, right? So like, you're not giving up. You're not letting your kids walk all over you. Why would you? It's not healthy for them to do that. But there's no reason for you to overposture beyond your effectiveness. It's just dumb.
Right. Okay. Yes.
All right, next. Dismissing their interests. Did you know that by the age of 3, children start developing their own interests? These interests can range from dinosaurs and princesses to even complex things like the solar system.
Wow.
Dinosaurs are somehow less complex than the 8 planets in our solar system?
Well, that's just weird.
I don't know how to respond to that.
I have a preference for the Milky Way. Gaga, goo goo. When parents dismiss or belittle these interests, it can be quite discouraging for a child. It sends a message that their passions aren't important. But if you take an active interest in what your child enjoys, you're showing them that their thoughts and feelings matter to you. It helps them feel validated and respected.
I mean, are they the cartoonish level of which he's applying? Like, Dad, I just want to learn more about solar systems. Planets are dumb. You ape, go back to your room.
Foosball's for the devil. What is this, Water Boy?
They're just really bad examples.
Yeah, right.
Learn more about dinosaurs. Go away.
Like, it's a nurturing perspective to like love on your kid and be excited about the kind of things that they get excited about to an extent. Yeah. Like, obviously, don't let them be like dangerous with themselves. Well, but, like,
it's just regular human behavior.
Yeah, right. Like,
hey man, I'm in Little League. Who gives a crap?
Dad, I think I like animals. Like,
shut up! Animals are only for food and to be shot.
You know
what?
Okay, if I can rescue the points, I would submit that like where we may make this mistake is in children's search of some things that are impractical. So like, there becomes a point where you're your kid might start following something and they're like, I'm going to be a professional ball player. You know they're not going to be a professional ball player, right? But do you have to drop that on them when they're 5?
Right, yes, exactly.
You
right.
probably don't.
Yeah, you can still play catch. And
yes, that's
they can
right.
even still play in like Little League.
Actually, right. I think it goes to the one of the first points, which is like, your kid's going to come to the conclusion on their own. Like, we got to the point where we're so nervous that we're going to create the American Idol audition that we forgot that like, someone supporting you because you dug on it is a confidence builder.
Yeah.
Again, people who believe, like, I can do anything do actually change the world. These
Absolutely.
Are people who change the world. And so, like, you got to balance the notion of reality, of what is likely to be true, to the thing that, like, you know, it's the only reason it won't be true is because you actually refused to allow it be a possibility.
Sure, yeah.
We're running in. So as an example, my oldest wants to write. She wants to be a fiction writer. Almost no one makes money as a living, like doing the only thing right. they do is writing fiction. But like, she could.
Sure.
And yeah. so, you know, what is more likely? The thing that's very difficult to happen is going to happen because I gave her a cold dose of reality, or I said, look, you're old enough to know this is a hard road, but if this is what you want, I'm in. In whatever way I can support it, I want to support it. And like, maybe she'll come to the conclusion that it's not going to work out, but I'd rather she come to that. And frankly, I'd rather be wrong about the practicality of it. I'd rather right. have been in full support of the thing, and then it works out and goes, look, yeah, Dad was for it. And I said, look, it seemed like a difficult road, but I'm in if you're in.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I'm saying? And so like there if there's a something to the point is sometimes it's how quickly things have to come to fruition. Is it okay if they learn their lesson by having to go through the process of buying the gloves? Yeah. If they come to the conclusion that they're probably not going to be a professional ball player when they're 15, is it okay that they came to that as opposed to me trying to guide that? Because they're not you. They're uniquely their own person. They're going to have likes and dislikes that are different than yours. And like, maybe you can learn something from that. And maybe things aren't going to happen the way that you think. I guess one of the things I remember from my own parent, like listening to my own parents, is like, I got a sense that they thought they knew how the world worked. And I know enough to know I don't actually really know that much about how the world works. I have a belief of how I think it often works, but like, there's a million ways of which it doesn't work the way I think it does. And so I have more opinions than I do facts on what their lives are going to work out like. And I should communicate it as such. A lot of parents sure. walk into, I know these are focusing on teenagers because this is where most of these are relevant, but like a lot of parents walk into it going, no, this is how the world works. And like, again, humble yourself a little bit. You have opinions on how you think things work, yeah. but like, you know, not always.
Yeah. yeah.
Hold it loosely.
I think especially you have to look at your station in life and be honest. Like, do you really? Yeah, do you really? You're working making 20 bucks an hour working for Firestone, you know, whatever. I mean, you probably don't know.
Right.
I mean, I have no clue.
I don't either.
I see some of these high off people in the world, you know, they're pushing levers. I think you guys know things I have no idea.
Right.
You know, I don't know. How, you know, I don't know.
Sometimes this lever goes up. Sometimes it comes down.
That's right.
Give me my money. I'm going to buy a solar system. Screw you, Dad.
Pluto's real.
Number four, neglecting promises. Promises to a child are like law. When we keep our promises, we show them that we are reliable and trustworthy. But when we break them, even for seemingly small things, it can shake their trust in us. Blah, 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 blah. So make a conscious effort to keep your promises.
Yeah, listen, just watch your mouth. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Don't be promising your kids you can't do stuff you right. can't do.
That's why dads always say maybe.
Yeah.
Drives them crazy.
Well,
yes or no.
Here's what I would say, though. Right, they do. Like, they insist because
maybe
they know you're dodgy on the maybe. But here's the thing. If you tell your kid you're going to do something, like, do it.
Do
it.
I do.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, we need to get to our, we're going to go to the, I don't know, Chuck E. Cheese on Sunday. Like, I don't care if it got inconvenient. Just go there.
Yeah.
You know, like, because here's the thing. It's less about, of course, your life is complicated. You're an adult. Of course, there's things that you have to balance that your kid doesn't. Again, you're the adult. Your problem. That's not your kid's problem. And, like, yes, they have to learn the reality that, like, not everything always occurs. But I would say, in general, if you tell your kids you're going to do something, like, you want them to trust you.
Right. Yeah.
You want them to have confidence in you that, like, if I remember this, our parents were divorced. And so, there came a time where we were old enough that Dad just started coming to pick us up. And I think he was supposed to, I don't remember the exact time, it was probably 7 or something. And like almost never there at 7 o'clock. Mike and I are ridiculous. We're like two, we see him every couple weeks. So like we're out waiting for our bikes on the edge of the apartment complex to see his car come down the road so that when we could race him to get back to our apartments to see if we beat him there. We'd be out there for an hour and a half waiting for this man.
Yep.
I don't know. I think this story, like every week or every time he came to pick us up, he'd be late, right. Significantly late. And so I think back to my whatever 12-year-old self riding this bike. I'm like, what the heck? Couldn't my dad just be on time?
Yeah.
I fell asleep on the couch. Why? Like, come pick your kids up.
Right.
Or like, tell me it's going to be 8. But sleep for half an hour and then come pick me up.
Yeah.
Like, what a goofball thing to not be able to keep your... I mean, like, whatever. I'm not mad at Dad. But like, I just think about it. And like, why didn't you just show up when you were supposed to and keep your promise to me? Like, I want my kid to go, look, Dad would... if I didn't make it to an event or something, or I was supposed to do something for them, that their first reaction is like, oh, yeah, that's Dad's like that. But to go, no, it must be, I'll give Dad the benefit of the doubt. Because if he told me he was going to be here, he shows up. Like, I just, yeah. I get it. Again, I understand it. Parents, I sympathize with the difficulties in your life. But, like, try to, if you're going to make promises, if you're going to tell your kid you're going to do a thing, you should try to do a thing and, like, inconvenience yourself to do it.
Yeah.
For as long as it takes to establish a thing that you're trustworthy.
Yeah. Hey, man, I just did a funeral recently where the adult children were in the room. They're all in their, you know, 50s. And talking about Dad, who was in his, whatever, 80s or something when he passed away. Talking about a promise that had been broken from decades earlier. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like, I hate Dad. But to bring that up at this point, it left a scar.
Yep.
You know, it did. It did. Whatever that was. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I think there's a balance to it, of course. I know that your kid has to recognize that just because you said it and whatever, you had to end up doing something else for the day and it didn't work out, there's a life lesson in that too. But on balance, try to keep your promises and here's the thing, to what the first thing we said, you could always say maybe, but like once your kids get old enough, they're not dumb. They're going to see what you're doing. Like, why can't you just say, yeah, for sure, I'll be there, for sure, we're going to do the thing. I will let other things fall to the wayside to make sure this happens for you from me. There's something powerful in it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number five, avoiding difficult conversations. When my son first asked me about the concept of death, I was taken aback. It was a topic I was not prepared to discuss with him. I initially tried to skirt around the question, but he was persistent. Eventually, I realized that if I didn't discuss these difficult topics with him, someone else would, and they might not explain it in a way that's appropriate or sensitive. By being open and honest, even when the topic is uncomfortable, you show your child that they can trust you with anything. This openness fosters respect and encourages a deeper connection with your child.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes they're going to ask hard things. I'm not really sure. He's like, I tried to skirt the issue. He'd be like, Dev? What? What do you, anyway, Twinkies, look.
I'll take you to Chuck E. Cheese on Sunday.
I promise, maybe.
Yeah, I promise. Yeah, definitely. Well, and I think, we love it.
Because you went, I don't know. Well, yeah, definitely. I don't know.
Sorry. Like, sorry.
You went up and down on your affirmations of your own thought.
I was just thinking that, like, someone, like, there has to be age appropriate. But yeah, but
yeah. Yes.
But I often come back to the thought that, like, these kids, my wife has stuck with me. She chose to say yes. These kids did not have a choice on their father. And so it's totally my liability to be the best possible dad because they cannot take any responsibility for the one that they got. And so, you know, if who else is going to do this kind of thing? It's not acceptable for me to defer it, right? And so it has to be age appropriate. But, like, this is where we're getting, and, like, not to go off on a – to go too far off the side, but like I get the same thing. What are we laughing at? Okay, fine. I'll give it up. I won't say anything. Yes,
I didn't say. I just was reacting to the situation.
I'm moving on.
Take your aside, because I would love to hear where you're heading.
Nope, we're not going to do it. Six.
Wait. I just want to say this.
No.
On the difficult things is when you start young at the age appropriate level.
Yeah,
it's not hard later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I had girls. I talked boy stuff with them. At a fish tank level when they were super young, like, oh, yep. Look at how they're shaking their tails. You're going to hit boys doing all kinds of silly things to get your attention. They're like, oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Have you watched Guppies? I mean,
there's a dude outside my house shaking his butt at me.
Pretty like, soon you have babies.
You need to go.
But that helped later on. It was like, yeah, this guy was good, you know, being a jerk, whatever. And it's like, yeah, well, yeah.
He's a tail shaker.
He already had the foundation.
Right.
My 14-year-old comes into my house, Dad, there was a tail shaker. I'll kill him.
Pretty much.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. Like, you lay the foundation of it. And, like, things, especially dads, like, there's just things that are not off limits. Like, you got to be comfortable having conversations with your kids.
Yeah. And if you've never had it, you're all of a sudden like, there's the sex, you know.
Yeah,
I mean.
Right. You're right. Let me talk to you about the menses.
So watch this movie.
When an Adam and an Eve love each other very much.
I say that word openly in my place. They get used to it, and then I get to have relevant, hey, Dad, I'm not feeling very well. Hey, what's going on? Is this the menses? Then I know it's going to be a problem for a few days.
I'm out.
I hate that for your children.
Nope. They only get one.
You're stuck with me, Menchus.
That's the most it's the most awkward thing to say because nobody says that.
So, no, of course not.
I chose that intentionally. Like I'm like, I'm all in. Here we go. Number six, always solving their problems. We already talked about that one. Not trying to, like, giving them space to fail.
Sure, yeah. Kind of stuff.
All right. Number seven, I think this is the final one.
Yeah.
Just if you want your child to respect you when you're older, stop doing this. Don't show them, not showing them respect. This is perhaps the most critical point. If you want your child to respect you as they get older. I really enjoyed that.
It was enough to go and point at me.
I felt so
to
good.
Where in audio, no one got that. They just heard a...
Here's what I'm going to tell you the problem. I literally can't see this article. I'm so blind at this.
Why are you
at this distance? I can't read the words very well. And so I couldn't tell what the next word was. And I'm like, quick cover, point and move, and make this noise. I'm so old that I can't see it. Okay.
Oh gosh.
Anyway. You need to increase the size of your letters there.
All right. Anyway, you must first show them respect. Respect their time, their feelings, their thoughts, and their space. Teach them that respect is a two-way street. By treating your child with the respect they deserve, you model the behavior you wish to see in return. It's a fundamental principle of mutual respect that can transform your relationship with your child. I think this is true, and it's an outskirts of, look, at some point, you're not the dominator here. Like, they're becoming their own person. You got to let them become their own person. And here's actually, this goes back to the authoritative one. Like, if you're not willing to be humble to them, like, you're saying, I do not respect you as a individual person. You are just a person to be, like, molded and moved around as a chess piece. And like, they're going to feel it. They're going to feel it as they age. And so, yes, continue with the boundaries and stuff, but like, they are going to have their own thoughts. Treat their questions like, actually, anything that refers back to your own parenting. I did not raise you to do this. What do you mean? Like, yeah, you did.
Very specifically, here we are.
Or whatever the occurrence was, this is what you came to. And so they made a decision. I respect that they're capable of making their own decisions. I just disagree with it. I'm going to provide boundaries and otherwise try to contain whatever damage their decisions are and try to talk them out of it. But like, there was a point at in some of my older girls' lives where, like, I don't know, they were doing something that they shouldn't do. And my wife and I were talking through it. I said, look, man, you think, oh, they're 18 or they're 21. I can't do much anymore. Like, when they're 13, you can't. What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
You going to hold them hostage in the room, like, send them to the room? What if they refuse to go? Are you going to force them to do it?
Right.
Can you physically, like, hold them back? Like, you just can't. You actually cannot do anything as soon as they're old enough to recognize, like, that you cannot force them. And so that's the point at which you go, then I have to stop threatening force. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I send one of them, hey, you gotta stay up and you gotta finish cleaning this thing. If they just said no, I can't make them clean it. I physically can't. I can't make them stay in the room. I can't make them, you know, do their homework. They could refuse any of it. And so once you realize that about your kid, it's the time to recognize that they will start making their own decisions. And now you need them to do it because they respect you, because they trust you, because they have confidence you're looking out on their behalf. The more you try to puppet that and force it around when you actually don't hold any control anymore, like, the more you're going to lose that, and it's going to become very rough.
Yeah. Well, and I think that the other perspective of that, and I recognize that this is coming from, I'm not a dad, but from what I've seen, and I mean, I've seen you guys raise your kids, and I've been involved in a lot of different situations where I've seen parents doing their thing, right? But like, by the time they're at that level where they recognize, well, I'm just going to make this decision, right? And like, they can threaten all they want. No, they're not going to do anything. As in, like, the kid is saying, thinking that about the parent. But like, you've already spent 10 years instilling mm-hmm. in them that you are trustworthy. And that, like,
or not.
Or not. Exactly right. Yeah. The exact opposite. Right. Like, you have instilled that in them through the years that they didn't know that they could say no. And then that was how it went. Right. But like, so that by the time they're that age, if you say, hey, you should do this thing, they recognize, I bet they have my best interest in mind. I can trust this person because they've kept their promises, kind of thing. I've always felt respected because there was a level of autonomy that I had as a kid. Like, I'm a 5-year-old and I want to go crazy and eat all the ice cream in the world. But mom and and dad came in and went like, hey, I recognize that what you want is a sweet treat because that's exciting. Why don't we try something this? Would you like to have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich instead? Or would you like to have a banana, both of which are sweet, right? Like you instill that in them and their ability to make choices, but then trust you and respect you for those because you're not authoritatively lording over them that the reason you do what I say is because I'm dad or I'm mom. You do what I say because there is a level of authority that I have, but also you understand that I am trustworthy and that I do respect you and you should respect me. And there's boundaries in this and I want you safe and making great decisions because I care about your well-being kind of thing.
Yep. All right. You're listening to Life from the Path. You can give us a buzz on the old Life from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085. That's for Old Testament questions. Adoration for Bob Eisenhower from the Eisenhower team for all your local real estate needs here in the Des Moines metro area.
He's great.
He is great. And also, I don't know, maybe do we get into that parenting stuff wrong? What rebuttals do you have? Where have we missed? Should I realize I messed up my kids? And maybe you can tell me so I catch it before it fully sinks in.
The solar system's fake.
Birdcage.
Hey, completely unrelated thing.
Yep.
Oh, fantastic.
Right. Sunday morning, I'm leaving the house and I'm going on you got those split level thing. Go down the stairs. I just hear a little noise. Don't think anything about it. I left. I come back after church and like you can see this. The basement through our stairs. I'm like,
oh,
this is weird.
Uh-huh.
And I go up the stairs. I'm like, maybe I shouldn't be on this, you know? And Cheryl looks at it like, this looks weird. Anyway, we just text a little Snapchat, to the family, house family falling apart. Son-in-law shows up like 15 minutes later and he's like, don't walk on these steps. They're literally separated from the house on the interior. I didn't think that even could happen. Anyway,
right.
That has nothing to do with anything other than like, man, that's kind of weird.
Crisis averted.
Yeah. Because good relationship with the kids.
Yeah, nice.
They didn't have, like, I was like, no, really? That's what we did. They're like, you got to go help save my dad. Because I was like,
Dan instilled a mutual respect between him and his children 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And that means that his daughters are willing to send their husbands to potentially save his life.
I think that's all right. It never occurred to me till about the last 6 months that I like might look forward to who these people are going to marry.
Yeah.
Like they might marry a cool person that I want to be around.
I know. Yeah.
I'm always like playing defense. Like you stay away from it. Like, what if they get a good one?
What if they get a good one?
I want to talk to them.
What a hopeful life you could have lived, Ben.
I know it. Anyway, if you sabotage Dan's house, 515-517-0085, you might as well repent.
My house is for sale. Talk.
That's right.
Those are prizes.
Okay. We got time for one advice to take.
Dare, live from the path.
That's me.
I'm married and in my mid-40s.
Okay.
My wife and I have a robust social life for which we both feel very lucky and blessed. Mm-hmm. We have amazing friends who are a wonderful support system and with whom we go out regularly. Lately, our wives have been wanting to go to dance clubs where the majority of the people are half our age. I'm the youngest of the husbands in our friend group. We go along despite feeling uncomfortable. We get weird looks and the occasional comment, and it's awkward being there. We've talked about it among the guys and agree this is a tough situation. We've had a conversation with our wives about feeling uncomfortable, and we all get similar responses like, well, then don't come. The one or two times I've sat out, my wife was cool toward me for several days afterwards. She's angry. Cool means angry. She really enjoys going to clubs with her friends, and I don't want her to stop enjoying her life. I also understand she feels safer in these environments when I'm around. It's just hard for me and my buddies to feel like losers or people who are much too old to be at the club, despite the fact that we're with our wives. Is my perspective valid? Or do I just need to suck it up?
I don't know, Booba. What do you think?
You saw my face and went, I'm going to make him talk right now.
Dan was also making a similar face.
I just, I don't know. Like, part of me wants to say, like, hey, man, like, just go. If your wife feels safer, go. But, like, the other part of me is like, if she wants to go and it's that awkward for you, like maybe she should give a little too and go like, hey, let's go half as often. Or maybe I'm fine going and I'll just text my husband while I'm there so I can feel safe. Or him and his buddies can be at the place across the street or something. So that if I come running out screaming, holy hell, then he'll be able to run and see me. I don't know. I want to be like, just shut up, dude. Just go love your wife. But I also totally see his point.
Yeah, I mean, can't he just hang out at the table with the fellas? And like, is she asking me, like, if you don't come out and Roomba with me, then, you know, you're out.
Yeah. You know I love this Shania Twain song. Get out here, honey.
Well, is that the implication that he's supposed to be out on the floor cutting a rug?
I don't think so.
He didn't say.
I think it's just presence.
Yeah.
And they just feel awkward because they just look like a table of dudes, old dudes at a creepy club.
You are,
which is
a
totally
table
fair.
Of old dudes.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's true. You are being looked at that way. You are not incorrectly taking in the situation.
Yeah.
I think that the wives are going through a little midlife crisis. They're 45, wishing, still thinking they're 25 or wishing they're 25.
Sure.
All the 25-year-old dudes are looking at him and saying, "What are these old women doing here?" And the husbands are probably, you know, looking around going, everybody our age has matured past this and actually have lives now. Or they've learned to do it different ways.
Sweet Moses, Dan.
Well, anybody who dances
is an immature boob. Well, what do you think? There's a solar system?
Yeah, mature past this.
I'm just saying.
If you ladies looked at yourself right, you would say you didn't care about this.
Good, Dad.
I mean, I get the point. It was just kind of funny.
I mean, I can't remember why. We went to some deal. I think it was like a Halloween thing. And it was like we were with someone, helping someone or doing something. And there's some people our age. It was probably 10 years ago. So still not young, right? And they were in some club and everybody was all in their little costumes. And I'm going like, guys, we don't belong here. Like, and I can't for the life of me think of why. We were helping, like I said, somebody rescuing them or something. I don't know. Somebody needed a car. I don't know. I think their husbands were saying, please
more
get my wife.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So we were exchanging cash for a cocaine kidnapping.
You just don't fit.
Dan finally realized that the Monster Mash is a song about a dance, but it's not actually the dance itself. And he went, I'm tired of being in these Halloween clubs. I've matured past this point.
Jeez,
you aren't actually Dracula. Get away from me.
I hadn't been so uncomfortable for a long time.
I can only imagine you not only in a dance club setting, but for some
that
reason everyone's in
yeah.
Halloween costumes. Like, and you're sitting there in that
all
shirt.
It's all sexy stuff. It's not like, oh, I'm a nice little witch. You know, it's like, oh, no. I don't need to see that stuff.
I'm sorry. Dan, can I take that back for a second? Was your statement, I'm a nice little witch?
Or whatever the costume.
There is no one more in tune with the common man than Dan.
I got this nice little maid
outfit.
There
are two types of costumes in Dan's life. It's either it's sexy stuff or I'm a good little witch. That's the juxtaposition in Dan's understanding of Halloween costumes.
Okay. His wife's been wearing the same costume for the last 40 years because Dan can't take anything else.
We both dress up as mummies.
We are American Gothic every year, woman.
Cover that up.
I'm going to be Mario. That's sexy stuff. What kind of stuff you into, bro?
I'm a good little plumber.
I'm just saying there were things going on there that I didn't think happened.
Hey, hey guys.
This club is lecherous.
The world is in here.
Leave some room for Jesus.
Can I give you a gospel track?
Oh, gosh. Okay, here's what I'm gonna do. I think this ties back to some of the advice that we were talking about with the children. Ew. Your wives are gonna get over this.
Yeah,
I think they're good. So I think you play along for a decent amount of time, and they're eventually gonna figure out that something very odd is happening. And
take pictures of them. See, they'll see how ridiculous they look.
Shove it in their face. How stupid they look.
Hey, that guy's dressed as Douglas Moo.
Okay, just so it's clear, I do not agree with Dan's recommendation to take pictures of your wives to say, look how ridiculous you look.
Give them some tightening cream or whatever aging cream or whatever stuff they make out there.
Oh, wow.
No.
We should have matured past this. Yeah.
I wish you were mature like I was. Here's a photo album of you looking stupid.
Okay, here's I did think of an alternative option now that Dan has suggested it. You could just pay another man in the club to insult them.
Oh!
Here, Dan, here's $20.
Hey, Mom.
Thing.
Some old guy comes up, ew.
Were you my mom's friend in college?
I'm never going there again.
Yeah, you guys are gross.
Dan is holding on to his wife as she's crying. He's going, yes.
Yes.
Best $20 I've ever spent. Oh, no. Wow.
Okay.
Listen, indulge in it for a bit.
I think the most non-confrontational situation might be, like, let it play out. Set a timeline with the fellas, whatever you can tolerate. Call it a year or something, and just see if they get over it.
Sure.
All right? Talk to, and in the interim, I think a couple of the suggestions are pretty good ones. So one, if you can hang out at the table and just talk with it, here's the thing. What do you care?
It's play not cards. Like you're
gonna be up. Take some cards with you.
We're going to play Pinochle.
Yeah.
As someone who's been a bouncer at nightclubs, I would totally hang out with that group of fellas. That's if they're sitting there hanging out playing Pinochle, I'd be like, I don't even know what this game
every
is.
Every 20 minutes he's like, Pinochle!
Where's the shuffle
you guys
board?
Seem great. I want to hang out with you.
Or like, I mean, tell me how many hours a week you spent like taking a false number two, playing on your phone. Do it in the club. What do you don't care? All right? Oh, so like funny. Pass the time. Or yeah, if there's a place nearby you want to go like hang out at the sports bar while your like, ladies are at the club, that way you're there for kind of support or whatever. There's some interim steps. I think this will die down. I hope your wives are having the time of their lives. They're going out, having a good time, dancing. I think they'll get over it. But like, if they're having fun now, what do you care? Right. Do your best to support it. Hope it goes away. Find other things to spend your time. And if it becomes a real problem, here's what I would say to your wife is that like, I need you to know I'm here because I love you. I love that you're having a good time. I want to support you. We just feel a little bit out of balance though, because to be honest with you, this is not how I would elect to spend most of my Saturday nights. And so, like, can we find a balance where we don't do this as often? Here's the things I'm interested in doing. Can you either come along with me or at least allow me to go do
that? Except for the dudes are like, I just want to sit at home doing nothing.
This is the problem with the dudes.
That's what I was just about to say is the flip side of this is your wives, could be seeking out this because they're getting absolutely no attention or affection at home. True. And so, like, bring some romance back in, fellas. You've probably been married for 25 years at this point in time. Like, you could very easily have just slipped off into being a roommate with this lady unless you want sexy times and it's convenient for you. Maybe you should romance your lady a little bit more often. She'll be less likely to feel like she needs to be validated at a nightclub.
Yeah, well, I mean, she could just be enjoying herself, but the point is rightly taken. Like, if you had a better alternative, like, hey, I booked us a room at the Garden Inn or something.
Yeah, sure. Like, ew. Why'd you have to say it that way? It was fine if you would have just said, I booked a room at the Garden Inn, and we would have been all fine with it. But you were like, I booked a room at the Garden Inn. Why'd you make it sound lecherous?
They have the forbidden fruit.
That's what.
Hey, baby, who I'm married to, I booked a room at the Garden Inn.
To be more enticing than the nightclub.
That didn't sound enticing at all.
No, it sounded terrifying.
Sounds like you could still smoke in there.
Baby, do you feel loved at a Motel Ocho? It's Spanish.
I'll get to pack of Bronson's.
You want to remember our teenage years? There we go.
All right.
What's the secular advice? It's got to be worse than ours.
You know, you two with the shirts, you're not allowed to talk no more.
What do you mean?
It's the Garden Inn.
The Garden Inn. I've not matured past this.
Yeah, take pictures of her. Shove it in face. You both are in the same boat in every way.
I disassociated with Dan. I was very clear about that.
And then you, hot girl. Oh, then there's you.
Then you reassociated with that shirt.
All right. Segular says, no guy is, quotes, too old to go dancing. If your problem is that you feel weird doing it, you and your friend should consider signing up for some dance classes. That's
what I like to do. That's so dumb.
Hey, man, I hate painting. You should have painting classes.
You should embarrass yourself in an instructional situation.
Oh, no. She doubles down. No, I am not kidding. With someone who is experienced and has the patience to teach you, you might actually have fun. Those who have two left feet or no sense of rhythm should consider another activity on the nights their wives go dancing. P.S. Your wife should not punish you for feeling awkward about going to these clubs. She should instead be trying to help you. You know,
I mean, it's kind of just a little bit in the end, but still.
People just make the best of their situations anymore. Like, you know what I'm saying? You just throw your hands up and you're like, I don't want to go to this. Why don't you just go and figure something out? Strike up a conversation with some random people. Try ordering some new drinks you've never tried. But try to sneak food in if it's banned. You know what I'm saying? Like, have some fun with it. You don't have to, like, go there and be, like, some kind of curmudgeon-y doofus. Try to pocket silver, see if anybody catches you on the way out. There's just all kinds of fun things to do, and you're wasting your time being upset.
Go and order a new drink you've never had before. Go to the bar where your wife is dancing out on the dance floor, 25 years older than everybody else, as the creepy guy that's been sitting in the corner, walk up to the bartender and be like, you know what I've never had? A Cosmo. Let me give it a shot one time.
Do you have chocolate milk with lemon?
What do you have that's flavored like cherry? I'm very interested.
I would like a mojito. The J is silent.
Is anyone here Brazilian? I've heard of these caipirinhas.
You want to see a picture of my grandkids?
Do you have a virgin daiquiri?
All right. You've been listening live for the path. Thanks for hanging out with us. We really do appreciate it. I'm sure you have, if you're a reasonable person, you have complaints. Hit them with the Live from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. Also, if you go to livefromthepath.org, there's a link there to our shop. If you want to pick up some sweet Live from the Path gear,
oh, yeah,
there's some nice stuff out there. The War Donkey coffee is there. There's some fresh t-shirts. I've been ordering a few things just to make sure they're of decent quality. I got the sweatshirt. It's super expensive. So, I mean, you got to really love it. But it's nice. I've been wearing it the whole week. It's holding up. Looks good.
Dead for today.
I put this.
You should have worn it today.
Yeah.
We would have been bettered by that.
I put this hot you slice of life.
Do Arnold Schwarzenegger after he retired from being a governor.
You got that shirt secondhand and went, someone was a fool for giving this up.
Now I have it third hand.
I do look like a guy who books a room at the Garden.
I'll have two mojitos.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see if we're back next week. In the meantime, be faithful to the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.